And like I said, if you're listening to us on a podcast, you can still have questions for our guests and we will forward them. Bands go through changes. It's sort of a fact of life that only the Rolling Stones seem to be able to defy. Bands break up, they reunite, they change names, they change styles, they add people, they lose people, they change homes, people join other bands, they go solo, they leave music altogether. It's all part of the ebb and flow of the creative process. Stick Against Stone has had a history of all that over its 30-year lifetime. And with each change, at each new step in their evolution, they have maintained what many critics feel is one of the most creative blends of Afrobeat, punk, reggae, funk, jazz, dub, and horns and percussions in our time. They started out writing music in a basement in Pittsburgh. They crisscrossed the country, sometimes in a converted yellow school bus. They played music and certainly they played politics. And now they have, after 30 years, recorded an album, and it's a must-hear, must-buy, must-play album. And with us today to tell us a bit of that history and also tell us about the music Stick Against Stone creates is percussionist manager and creative force, Will Kreft.
Creative force.
Will, welcome to Music Friday Live.
How dare he.
Hi, thank you, Patrick. I'm glad to be here.
He's not a creative force. He's a
Will, I'm sure that you're sort of sick of answering the question, what took you so long to record an album, so I'm not going to ask it. Instead, I'm going to ask you, what prompted you to record after 3 decades
you
of success in live performances?
You never invited to be in the band?
Oh, that's a good question. There were just low fidelity recordings. There were cassettes handed from person to person. There wasn't a proper album, to your point. And one song had appeared on a compilation from a small Pittsburgh record label called TMI. But just one song, right? I mean, that's hardly representative work for any group. And it was pressed on vinyl back in about 1983, 82, and disappeared into the ether. But the group moved around, to your point, quite a bit, and that may be part of why they never settled down and just went into the studio. Plus, for those old enough to remember, back in the 80s, it was hard to get the connections and the money and the whole energy level together to go in and record an album and press it, and let alone find a label if you were going independent. There were some notable examples in the punk era of DIY independent labels right there in Southern California, but it wasn't everywhere, and that knowledge was not widely distributed.
Well, I want to ask you to that point of how is it that six people in Pittsburgh in 1981, where it was easy to beat DIY and get all this kind of information in and listen to lots of other bands on Spotify and whatever, how did those six people decide that percussion and horns and Afro, jazz, punk, reggae was what they wanted to do? I mean, the top Billboard songs that you're just so our listeners have the context. The top Billboard songs that year were by Kim Carnes, Diana Ross, Kenny Rogers, John Lennon, Kool & the Gang, Rio Speedwagon. So what pointed you to horns and percussion and jazz and Afro-punk?
Well, the group started before I met them, so I can speak kind of like as a historian level. I later became their sound man in 1984. But in 81, when they started, they were kind of in a rejection of, in some ways, a rejection of guitars and punk rock, and let alone pop music and arena rock and what would later would come along, hair metal, things like that. They grew up listening to a lot of eclectic music, and they've been the best in the world. They had a community radio station in Pittsburgh, WYEP, they listened to, and also college radio stations that would bring over import records from England and Jamaica and 12 inches from Germany and Africa and places like they would have all this great music in their ears, yet they were in Western Pennsylvania in basically the Rust Belt. If you're going to be punk in the Midwest, you really have to be dedicated to it in the sense of saying, our music, we're going to create something new, and we're going to consciously try to take our influences and go in a different direction. And that's what their friends have acknowledged when I've talked to them, that they wanted to reject some formulas, three chords and two guitars and the drummer and a bass player and a grudge. They wanted to go in a different direction, and they had all the skills because they grew up playing horns and jazz drumming, and while many of them were in rock bands before that time.
You're an idiot. You don't know.
Well, as it turned out, they picked the right direction. Today, 30 years later, fusion music with Afro and Latin beats is all over the place. So they were kind of precursors to that in a way. Now, the band, talked about, the band moved around a lot. They were in New York City, they went to Oregon, they spent a lot of time on the road. When you joined them in 1984, so you were part of their moving around, did you pick up influences in each of those places, or did the music stay pretty much the same?
I'd say maybe yes and no. I think the influences were maybe not necessarily local influences per se. I think they were different. They stood out wherever they were. They weren't just punk. They weren't just reggae. They weren't just rock. They weren't just like jazzy or influenced by horns. They had a little bit of all those things, and yet still have their own sound. And songwriting wise, it was more melodic than what came earlier in the New York downtown scene, which was with the no wave movement, which was more dissonant, more abrasive, more kind of confrontational. This was, I'd say, a blend of some pop songwriting, but in the sense of more a lean toward melody, but still with elements of experimentation.
Well, the album Instant really showcases the complex Afro beats and the jazz horns. So I assume that's just who the band is
original.
Those beats and those horns.
Idiot.
Well, that's where they come from. Richard, the original drummer, was the son of a jazz drummer. He grew up listening to, he worked at, his father owned a record store in a little town in central Pennsylvania called Indiana, Pennsylvania. And one of the things he told me was that his dad said, if there's ever a record you want to hear, you can go take it home and listen to it. And so he was listening, diving into Fela Kuti and King Sonny and some of the best, Afrobeats and high life and, African pop music, along with Jamaican imports as well. So he was deep into rhythms from around the world, in addition to knowing what was happening with progressive music in Europe and also with the punk movement coming over. So there was a cross-pollination that was happening at that time. And I think there's a small window in time between the very late 70s and the early mid 80s where you saw a lot more chances being taken in music, in contemporary music in general, where all those cultural things were kind of up for grabs, if you will.
Yeah, well, like I said, that they were precursors. Let's give our audience a little bit of a taste of this. This is the title song.
Won't you tell me, please, what's your story? We know you like the third party. I like to put you on like I wear my clothes. Take a wedding go with no way to book. I like your hair, I love the way that you dress. It's money, muscle, booze, and your tenderness. What's your hurry? We know you like the party.
Before we talk about the music, and I want to point everyone to the lyrics, the words rug under goes and still you go on, face in the mirror and it's you all alone, Now, not only is that very clever writing, the reference to saying to the saying about pulling the rug out from under you, and then to the Robert Graves poem, A Face in the Mirror, which, of course, was in the Doors song, the 1967 song, When the Music Is Over. So there's a lot going on here at many levels. And Daniel Ramirez, who I think wrote those lyrics in 1984, was very, very good at it. Has it changed over the years? Have people in the band sort of tweaked it, or are we hearing the final cut of that song?
You're hearing, I think, the final cut of that song, and that's because Daniel is on that song. Just a quick note for the listeners, Daniel Ramirez, our rhythm and sometimes lead guitar player for the group, we lost, unfortunately, last November to cancer. He passed away right the week the album came out. But we're happy to say that in the midst of that sad thing is that he was thrilled to know the music was coming out after all these years.
And he was brilliant. He was a great loss to music.
The song is a very heavy song. It's kind of about a tale of an abused woman. And for a man to write it from that perspective and to be in character, the song Instant, I really love that fact that he could really get into the character of this individual who is kind of on the run, and she doesn't know who her friends are anymore, and she's in an abusive relationship. And that's some interesting songwriting. You don't hear themes like that always necessarily in rock and pop and funk.
Now, your website has a link in it to lyrics and to the credits on all the songs, and that's rare, and I really appreciate it. Now, why does your band take the trouble to do that when so many bands don't even publish their lyrics?
Because you stole our material.
Oh, I don't know the full answer to that, other than it's a long time coming with they're trying to get these words and this music out in the world. So it's I'm a bit of a data nerd, so I try to pay attention to making sure that people can have access to stuff like that. Even we have set lists going back 35 years on Setlist FM. And we're still trying to fill that in. The gigs that they played in, you know, Pennsylvania, New York, Oregon, California, the tours they've been on. So it's that sense of telling a story through what you've done and also the material and the message you're trying to get across. It's, it takes work. You're right. It does take work.
And it's appreciated. We are talking with Will Kreth of Stick Against Stone, and you can talk with him too. You can call us at 347-215-7511, or you can email him, and we actually are getting emails already, Will. You can email him at musicfridaylive@gmail.com. And we're going to get to those emails in just a minute, but there's some more music we want to play here, and this one particularly is Breaking Habits. The other one is with G.J. Soysos, which is kind of mystical and not really Jamaican. If we have time, we may play a bit of the other one, too. But in the meantime, I can't let the lyrics in that one get by me. If you mind your own affairs, cause nobody harm. But when you look the other way, the trouble hits you double hard. Now, that's Saturday Morningside singing. She also sang the original when it was written in 1983. Has she been with the band since the beginning, and are those the original lyrics?
Those are the original lyrics, and she has not been with the band since the very, very beginning, but she joined in '83. Band was only 2 years old, I guess, or a little 2.5 years old when she came on board.
Okay, all right. Well, I really appreciate the writing. I often say that, you know, poetry's not dead. It's all around us. We just call it lyrics now. And some of the lyrics in many of your songs really prove that point.
There's several writers, and I think the shared experience of them being in close quarters pushed them to write kind of confessional lyrics, which I think often the ones that resonate with people the most if they feel personal. And there's definitely some stories behind every song.
Well, you keep very good records. Did you know, or did in Sticks and Stick Against Stones know that you were going to be historic?
Oh no! I think many of us had given up at some point or another, but that's okay. It's like I think everyone feels like as the years go by that, you know, your window is passed and your time is perhaps not going to come, and the reboot, or I call the rehydration of this group, started in about 2006 when I brought some of the former members together to re-record some of the tracks down at in Greensboro, North Carolina.
Well, I'm really glad you did. Very, very glad you did. Now, we have some emails here. We've got Ralphie in North Hollywood, and Ralphie wants to know, has the band toured constantly, and also, will we ever see you in California?
Well, thanks for that. No, not constantly. We're living and playing in New York now. Sari, the singer, and I myself, and we also sometimes have guests from the group from way back who come out from Pittsburgh. Bob Wenzel, the horn player, who sits in with us on occasion. We've been playing for a few years here, various lineups of the group in New York City, and we'd love to get back to California. The group lived in San Francisco and played there from 1985 to about 1990. Okay. But we'd love to get back on the road, but that, again, all these things take time, as you know.
Well, Rinaldi in Austin wants to know if you've ever been to South by Southwest.
I have been there several times myself, but just kind of as a participant and checking things out. It's definitely something. Who wouldn't want to come down to Austin? Love Austin. I lived there 6 years.
All right. Well, we're getting a little tight on time, and I have one more song I want to play, but we have one from hometown. Selena in New York City says, I heard you're going to have a gig at Rockwood. Is that right?
That's correct. Thanks, Selena. That's this Sunday at 8 p.m. We'll be at Rockwood Music Hall, stage one, which about seven of us. And we'd love folks to come out if you're in the New York metro to see us. And to our friends in California, you know, we'd love to get out there as well, too, and hopefully in good time.
Okay. Well, we have just a little bit of time left, and I want to play Mom's a Bungee. I really love that song, actually, because I've been listening to the music all day yesterday, and I think that's probably my favorite song.
Okay. Oh, thanks.
And just the title alone, you know, you just can't pass that up. Now, Daniel wrote those lyrics. This is a relatively modern song for you. Those lyrics were 2008, and the line in there, Mom's a bungee, I'm a clown, I know I'm not alone. And then he talks about her stretching her love from coast to coast. You know, that's pretty profound. Was he referring to his mother or to collective mothers of the band or to an iconic mother we all know and love?
I think it's a little of both.
Or none of the above.
I think there is some personal biographical things of his journey, his kind of coming of age story of like moving away from home and going alone and leaving town. So he came from Fond du Lac, Wisconsin, small town in central Wisconsin.
Okay. And Mom's Love stretched all over the place. All right, well, that's a great song. We are out of time, but I want to give you an opportunity to tell people where they can get your music.
Oh, we're available in a lot of places, but the place we most encourage folks to check us out is on Bandcamp. So the Stick Against Stone on Bandcamp is easily findable once you get there. Of course, we're, like everybody else, available on Spotify and all the major streaming services and physical through some Amoeba in California, and we have a distributor out of the Midwest, CTD, who's got us placed with some key record stores around the country.
Okay, all right. Well, I always like to direct people to Bandcamp because they pay real money to musicians, and as people listen to the show,
it's direct to the fan, where you can have a real connection with people, and I think that's great.
Yeah, okay. Well, thank you so much for taking the time to talk with us today. We really appreciate it.
Patrick, thank you so much for your time and for asking us to be on the show. Hope folks have a chance to check it out, and best to you and to the show.
Well, thank you. That's Will Kress of Stick Against Stone. You can follow them on Facebook.